I'll Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today. 750 is an easy platform for discovering everything you need to find as a wholesale buyer of wine and spirits. The searches are easy to do, and they provide a wealth of information for you to determine exactly what you need to buy today. Pricing, size, characteristics, who the distributor is, the contact information, and even helpful features like easy startup of credit apps are all available for you, as well as a listing of tastings, which is something I refer to almost all the time to find out about the tastings in my neighborhood. I personally use the 750 service. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's extraordinarily helpful if you are a buyer of wine and spirits at the wholesale level. And I recommend that you waste no time in making it a part of your daily routine. 750.com, the 750 service, make it work for you. Stelios Boutaris on the show today. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hi. How are you living?
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
So your family has, for a while now, owned the Kyriani Estate in Western Greece.
Northwestern Greece, yes. Kyriani Estate located on in Nausa. The appellation of Nausa, one of the oldest appellations in Greece, is situated about 100 kilometers west of Thessaloniki.
And it was your dad who purchased that property?
Yes, he purchased the property in the 60s. My family has been making wine for five generations now. My great-great-grandfather started in 1879. He was the first one to bottle Greek wine and sell it under the Nausa appellation. Back then, during the Ottoman years, I mean, Greece was not liberated at that time, North Greece, most of the wine was sold in bulk without any branding whatsoever. However, Thessaloniki, always was very much of a cosmopolitan town.
Which is the city in northern Greece.
City of northern Greece, the largest city of Greece.
And your dad's the mayor there now.
These days, yes. Anyway, at that time, my great-grandfather, he would take champagne bottles, use champagne bottles, and actually, you know, wash them up and bottle Boutari Nausa at that time and sell it in the local market.
Because it's funny, we think about Greece making wine for forever, for being one of the first cultures to ever make wine, and yet it, in some ways, it seems like modern Greek wine is more of a recent phenomenon.
Oh, absolutely. I always say that we have a great history. Yeah, we have the god of wine, Dionysus. However, we had a very short tradition. That's why very often I also call the wines of Greece the new old world, because it's very old in the sense that, you know, wine has been made forever there. Everywhere in Greece, grapes grow. However, it's very new in the sense that it's very new in the market. If you think about it, it's only since we've been exporting wine since the 40s, right? However, in the world wine scene, the Greek wines have only made it the last 10 years, 15, 20 years, I would say.
Which is kind of amazing in a way.
Well, yeah, you know what happened? I mean, Greek wine always had what I call an easy market. In the 60s, a lot of Greeks had to leave Greece and go to the U.S., you know, Chicago and New York, big Greek populations, Australia, Germany, Belgium, Canada.
Because of various wars in Greece.
After the Civil War, you know, the country was completely devastated. There was not really work. Everybody was quite poor. So we had to, they had to leave. Now, a lot of these guys opened up restaurants. But the traditional Greek low-end taverna, they needed a lot of Greek wine. And we would sell a lot of wine there. But we fall on our own trap in a way that this guy didn't want good wine. They wanted cheap wine. So a lot of the cheap wine was exported. And this created a vicious circle. You know, an American, for example, would go to a Greek restaurant. They would drink mediocre wines. They would have the idea that Greek wine is of lesser quality. This has changed a lot the last 20 years. These days, the wines from Santorini, from the Assyrtiko grape, or from Nausa, the Xinomavro grape, from the Peloponnese, Moscophilero, and Agiorgitiko, and with a lot of new producers, and old ones as well, we see a lot of very, very interesting wines. They're almost exotic.
Your family roots are the Boutari Winery, which right. Your dad was a part of. Mm-hmm. And they championed wines from different parts of Greece at different wineries within Greece. They had different facilities.
The Boutari, at one point, was the largest winery in Greece, still is probably, if not the largest, second largest. And my father always believed in the appellation. Started from Nausa, but then he went to Santorini, he went to Nemea, he went to Mandinia, he went to Paros, to Crete. So in the end, they had like seven wineries. It was very important to be very close to the area where you produce the grapes. You want to make sure the grapes come very quickly to the winery. But more than that, you know, you want to be part of the culture, of the local culture. So Butari has been a winery with many, many different, you know, being in everywhere in Greece, really.
Your dad actually kind of affected how Santorini entered into the market in the modern age.
Yes, Santorini is an island in the south of the Aegean, a very volcanic island. And traditionally, it was all planted with grapes. However, most of the wine, most of the grapes and the wine made there was harvested after September 15th. Now, September 15th is a big celebration in Greece, so everybody waited till September 15th, and then they harvested. As a result, wines were of very high alcohol level and very often oxidized.
Because it's hot and dry there.
Very hot and dry. The wines of Santorini were used mostly by big wineries in mainland Greece for the high acidity they have. So they would buy the in bulk and really blend it in their own blends, and so there was never like an appellation there. Although there was an appellation, there was never really any serious wine. My father went for vacation in 83, and suddenly, you know, approaching from the plane, he sees an island that's full of vineyards. So he decides to go and, and build a winery, and that's what he did. And the first thing he did that made a whole lot of difference is that, one, he doubled the prices he used to pay to growers. And second, he brought harvest date much, much earlier. Now in Santorini, they will harvest August 10th, maybe earlier. The wines have much more, they keep the minerality, they're much fresher, much crisper. The acidity is much more intense.
Because the Certico is odd in that it keeps acidity even at high ripeness levels. So it had acidity back then, but now that's even more showcased.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the acidity it has makes it a great food wine. The minerality it has. Acidico is actually the variety of Greece, I would say. You know, I'm a Xinomavro producer. However, I always say that Acidico is the one variety that is spearheading the Greek wine revolution.
It seems like it's the one that's made the most market presence in New York, at least.
Oh, absolutely. In New York, mostly. I mean, you go everywhere in New York and you find an Assyrtiko wine. We've been planting Assyrtiko in the north of Greece, in mainland Greece as well. And I think we're going to see some very nice results out of there as well.
Yeah, like Giravassili.
Giravassiliou has it, yes. I mean, we planted in Amyndion.
Is that true?
Oh, yes. Actually, we just harvested.
Because you have two facilities. One's
right. In Ausa, we have our major estate, Kyriani Estate, 58-hectare estate. And in Amyndion, we have another 18 hectares and a facility, and a crushing facility there.
In terms of Kyriani, your dad bought it in the 60s, and it was kind of like a secret that he kept from his family.
Well, as I said, Butari at that time, my grandfather, was a négociant. He would go out and buy grapes or buy wines and bottle them under the Butari label. My father was more in production, so he always believed that, you know, you made a good wine in the winery, but you make a great wine in the vineyard. So he wanted to control the land. Of course, my grandfather at times, like, you know, he wouldn't allow him to get, to, you know, he told him, you're not a peasant, you know, you don't get dirty in our business. You know, you wear a suit in the business. I mean, we're in sales and marketing. Anyway, my father got out there, found the land. It was actually a private forest. So he bought about 50 hectares, uprooted it, and planted it with vines.
Because when you're standing there, what you see a lot on the other hills is forest.
Yeah, exactly. We were in the middle of a forest there. And actually, I bought another 8 hectares from the daughter of the person that my father bought in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
It was great. It was really great. And anyway, you know, he wrote out a check to the guy back then, and my grandfather, I'm telling you, was very, very upset. But here we are now, and this is the most valuable part of our business.
And eventually there was a split between your dad and the family winery.
Well, like in many wine families, you know, I mean, sometimes egos get way out of the way, right? And so in 1996, my uncle and my father had an amicable split. My uncle kept the Butari business, still doing well. And my father bought from my uncle this vineyard that he had planted in the 60s. That's happening in 96. So he didn't want to come out with, you know, another Butari, you know, have the big Butari and the small Butari. So he decided to use his first name, Yanni. However, he used it as Kyriani. Kyriani in Greek means Kyrios is sir, mister, right? But when you cut the Kyrios to Kyr and you use the first name like Kyriani, it's a very amicable way of addressing somebody with a lot of, when you're very friendly to him, but you respect him also a lot. So all the growers throughout Greece, grape growers throughout Greece, always called my father Kyriani, right? I mean, because he was always close to them, you know, to the cafes, to the vineyards, always. So they would, but they had a lot of respect for him because he knew what he was talking about. He always kept his word on prices and all that, or timing of payments and all that. At the same time, he was always very close.
When was the first commercial vintage for Kyriani?
97. 97 was the first vintage that actually was vinified and bottled in the estate. We have 95, 96. These are vintages that were actually vinified and bottled in the big Butari facilities.
Oh, I see.
You know, so yeah. However, 97, that was a time, 96 they split. 97, he took this old tractor house that was in the middle of the vineyard and turned it into a winery. The same thing he did in Amindion, because he bought some vineyards there as well that he had planted back in the 90s. He bought this really, really, really old winery that was completely run down. It was really a shack, you know, like a completely run down winery. The reason he bought it, though, is because he had all the licenses and the permits. So he bought that, and that's why he calls the wines, the entry-level wines from Kyriani, from Amindion, they're called Paranga. Paranga in Greek means the shack.
Oh, okay.
He wanted to call it Chateau Paranga. I said, like, let's call it only Paranga.
So how should I understand the difference between Amindio and Nusa? That's two different...
Well, actually, there are two regions, right? Two appellations. On two sides of Mount Vermion, on a straight line, they're not more than 50 kilometers away from each other. However, there's a big mountain between them. In both regions, the variety Xinomavro grows. Xinomavro or Xinomavro is the variety that grows everywhere in northwestern Greece. In Ausa, the climate is Mediterranean. In Amindion, the climate is almost continental. In Ausa, the soils are much richer, clay. In Amindio, the soils are sandy. In Ausa, the appellation stands around, I mean, our vineyard starts from 100 to 300 meters elevation. In Amindio, you're 700 plus. So these small differences create wines with a very different character. I would say that in Ausa, the wines are bigger, more tannic, longer aging. In Amindio, they're more elegant, they're more spicy, they have a lighter color. So there are differences between the two. Also, in Amindio, you have the appellation of for rosé, and also the only appellation for rosé in Greece, and sparkling rosé. You have great results from sparkling Xinomavro out there.
So the Amindio facility is largely white and red wines, and some Xinomavro for both the rosé and some red.
Yes, we planted in the 90s, we planted some whites. I mean, the region is really a cold wine production region, so it's great for whites, great aromatic whites. So in the 90s, planted a little bit of the international varieties like Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Wurzstraminer, mostly for the local market. But also we planted Roditis, Malagousia, and Assyrtiko. So we focus on our whites in Amindio, and our rosés, but also make some red as well. I mean, we make a red from 60-year-old vines, some of them ungrafted. So it's quite interesting.
Because it's in sand, and so
right.
It can
so
be
a lot. Yes, you have some of the, that pre-phylloxera.
So Roditis is a great variety. What's that like to grow?
Roditis is one of those varieties that grow everywhere in Greece. It's quite easy to grow, not very susceptible to disease. It has a good yield, so it's for growers a great variety. When grown in plateaus and it's heavily irrigated, it gives really high yields. The wines are usually flabby, not very interesting, usually used for retina. However, when grown in altitudes, like in Amyndion or in Trapeza, in Aialia, in the north of the Peloponnese, Rhodites can give beautiful results. Nice, crispy wines, nice lemon freshness to it. You know, wines that taste like wine.
And then Malagousia.
Malagousia is a variety that, on the contrary to Rhodites, is very susceptible to disease, very difficult to grow. It's however, has a fantastic results in good years. Now you have Malagousia grown everywhere in Greece. Go to the north, you go to the south, there's always something going on there, on Malagousia. However, it's not an easy variety to grow. Yerbasilia is one of the best producers about it.
And it has more textural character sometimes than other grape varieties that are white from Greece.
Oh, yeah. And it has a better body. You know, I mean, some of it is barrel fermented. It gives a nice, full structure body to it. Beautiful nose. Very often you get these muscat flavors to it, but much more refined, much more elegant.
Back in Nusa, at the kind of core for the red wine production of the estate,
right,
you have Zeno Mavro planted in different blocks. You've isolated.
Right, I mean, mostly Zeno Mavro. Zeno Mavro, the vineyard was planted between 68 and 72 from plants taken from Amyndio. Then in the 90s, my father planted a little bit of Syrah and Merlot. Syrah, I think, has showed very, very well in North Greece. Merlot, not so well. Merlot is earlier ripening, so very often, especially in hot years, you might have really high sugar levels, high alcohol wines without the phenolic ripeness. That's why it's mostly used for blending. But Syrah has adopted very, very well. Now, I did my little revolution because my father never wanted Cabernet. I like Cabernet, so I planted some Cabernet about 4 years ago. And so we're seeing some Cabernet action also now in Ausa. However, the vineyard is mostly planted with Xeno Mavro. Half of it has been replanted, but some older parcels will always be there. It's great to have 50-year-old vines. And it's split in 48 different parcels. You see, now it's much more, it's a little bit like Burgundy. It's very much vineyard-driven and not commune-driven. You know, you won't say that the region of Rastra is very similar grapes or similar style wines compared to the Bolanera, for example, or Trilophos. You would have to find the right vineyard. So we're very lucky in our vineyard. We have all sorts of different soils, acidic soils, are great for Syrah, for example. I mean, not very good for Xeno Mavro. Actually, to put it correctly, they are good for light Xeno Mavro. Xeno Mavros that have great color and great nose. So these grapes will be vinified separately. Probably we see no wood. Then they were used in the final blend. Other parcels that with lower acid, clay with a high percentage of cultures, this is great for Xeno Mavro to age. So this would all also be vinified separately. What we've seen with Xeno Mavro, we always use a double sorting table, you know, sorting, destemming, sorting again. We use the big Pijaz vats, so we can use Pijaz. We push down the cap instead of pumping over the wine. We've seen that this is great for Xeno Mavro. We've seen that fermentation in wood also adds a lot of it, takes away a lot of the green or very harsh tannins that we usually have. So these are all practices we've been doing lately, and we see the results.
Because in some instances, Zeno Mavro can be a little harsh on the tannins.
Oh, yeah. Zeno Mavro is a difficult variety. It's like Pinot Noir a little bit. You know, you have to do a lot of work in the vineyard. A lot of people say it's also a little bit like Nebbiolo. It's nothing to do with it. It's just the style of wines that are quite similar. You know, big tannin structure, high acidity, good aging potential. But Xeno Mavro is a variety that, again, is very difficult to grow. If you overdo it, it's very prolific and can give a lot of grapes. We try to put this down. Some of our older vineyards, you know, they give like 25, 30 hectoliters per hectare. Really nice, beautiful fruit. Also, you have to be very careful during the growing season. You want to avoid Xeno Mavro bunches that are big. Usually they would be nice and red on the top, but uneven ripening in the bottom. They will be the berries will be squeezed to each other. That's a way to get diseases, botrytis and all that. So we try to make Xeno Mavros that are small berries, very loosely hang together, evenly sized berries. They give like really, really, really great fruit.
And do you see a difference between the Massal Xeno Mavro that you took from Amyndio and the clonal selections that were planted later?
Absolutely. One of the things that we've been trying and we'll be trying to master with Xenomavro has been the acidity and the high tannin level. So always what we've been doing lately, we always harvest like the first week of October. Now, what happens then is that you have acidity dropping naturally, of course. You have the tannins being riper. However, you have high sugar levels. And this is something we don't like. We don't like 15-degree alcohol wines. So what are you going to do? The work we've done with our agronomist, Harula Mithiropoulou, who also has her own winery, actually, Argatia, she found that the 6 clones of Xenomavros. And we've been planting the 2 of them. We've been planting lately to the vineyard. And we see some beautiful results. The wines, I mean, they're still young, so we cannot have the full spectrum of results. However, we see that we get the phenolic ripeness we need. We get it in the end of September without the high alcohol level and also without the risk of rain.
So you make the wines today, but there's been some changes in winemaking at Kyriani over the years. And how has that worked out?
The winemaker has always been my father. He worked with Angelos Iatridis from Alpha Estate. He has his own estate in Aminion, beautiful estate now. And he worked for us, and then he went out and did his own thing. My father loves doing that. He always had enologists and agronomists next to him, and he always pushed them to go out and do their own thing. That's what happened. Yannis Voyagis, Voyagis Estate in Velvedo, Hadzidakis in Santorini, Paraskevopoulos in Yea Estate in Santorini, and Nemea. All these guys used to work for us. And now they're doing a great job, and we like that. So it was Angelos Iatridis. Then for a while it was my brother, fresh out of UC Davis. And then we have a stint of different winemakers, enologists really, always under my father. 2004, I decided to join the business. I was in sales, I was doing other things as well, so I decided to join the business. That's what I did. And the first thing my father did, he left. So he left me doing this job. And we are a team, our enologists, Adonis and Damos, our cellar master, and Harula, our agronomist, and myself, we're a team of 4. And it's a group decision, you know. We always we have this rule. We always have to agree 100% in order to proceed with the final blend.
So these days when I taste the 2010 Ramnista from Kyriani, it seems different to me in structure and the way the tannins and acids are than the late or mid-90s wines.
Oh, absolutely. Back then it was, the wines are a little bit more rustic, I would say.
Back then.
More older style winemaking, you know, long extractions and a lot of wood aging. I think they lacked a little bit of fruit. These wines are nice now after like 20 years sitting on the bottle. However, this is very difficult. These days, you know, who keeps wine in a cellar, right? Who has a cellar? So we've been experimenting a little bit. I would say that we have the first period up to 99 with wines like that. Then we have the second period, 2003, where my brother at that time did a lot of work in the vineyard and identified the different plots. And we've been going kind of back and forth on playing with the fruit. And I would say that in Nausa, you have a very similar debate like Barolo. You know, you have the modernist, fruitier wine, barrique, and you have the traditionalist, you know, the big barrels of wines to age and brownish color and all that. In Nausa, we're the same. I would say that in Nausa, you have producers like Thimiopoulos, for example, who's much more modern. You have Foudis, who's much more traditional. We're in between. And to be honest, I mean, we've been playing around with the style. We haven't really found out. What is important for me is to have a nice balance and a nice elegance in the wine. And so you need the fruit. You need the acidity. You need the tannin structure that will hold it over the years to age. At the same time, they have to be ripe. They have to be soft. They have to be present, but not aggressive. And you need the fruit as well. People like fruity wines. I mean, you got to have the fruit, dense fruit on the mouth. The nose of Xenomavro is fantastic. I mean, there's no question about that.
What do you find when you smell a Xenomavro?
But you have all this red forest fruit that comes out. In more traditional styles, you have the tomato, you have the olives. When it ages, you get the dry fig, you get the barnyard smell, the tobacco box, you know, all these beautiful smells that make it unique.
Do you find a lot of vintage variation in Nusa?
Well, in general, in Greece, we don't have a big vintage variation. You know, more or less, year in, year out, more or less the climate is kind of steady, you know. Very rarely you would have like hail in July. Well, we did this year. I'll come back to that. But that's very rarely. You have that once in 20, 30 years. So you have like nice, easy Mediterranean climate. So you don't have a big vintage variation. In Aosta, since we're kind of north and we're close to the mountain and all that, we would have like maybe one vintage in 10 that's going to be bad. We'd have like 3-4 that are okay, but then you would have good vintages. You know, you don't have big vintage variation in Greece. In our wines, you would find variation because it's a style that differs from, as you said, from 2004, for example, the 2007, great year. We decided to play with less oak at that time. Then 2008, we harvest a bit later, so it's a bit more dense, the fruit. So it wasn't really the year. It was more like the winemaking techniques were applied. But now we know where we stand, and I think you're going to see a steady flow of vintages the next few years. For example, wood aging, you know, barrel treatment. That's something that has been changing a lot lately. We're dropping the new oak, moving to 500-liter barrels, not to 225, bringing down the time the wine stays in wood. I mean, wood is great. It dresses up the wine. You need it. On the other hand, we don't like to overdo it.
Where is that wood sourced from? Where does that come from?
Oh, that's all French oak.
It's all French oak.
French oak, yeah. And we've been working with a number of houses. You know, with wood, the same with cork, you don't play around. You know, it's. I think these are the two most important material that you put on the wine, right? I mean, for example, with cork, we work with the same company for like three generations now. You know, they take care of us. We take care of them.
And how do you find that Zeno Mavro responds to wood as a grape variety?
It's because it's not a heavily fruity wine, and not, it's more like Pinot Noir. It's more like a wine that has elegance to it rather than body and structure. I would say that you have to be very careful with the wood treatment. If we've seen wines that go to 100% new oak, they completely lose their style, and all you taste is oak. For example, though, on the other hand, we have another wine called the Diaporos, which comes from Block 5. Block 5 is one of the better blocks, 50-year-old vines, overlooking the small lake that's in the winery. Great inclination, great drainage. Always been producing great grapes. Now, we try to vinify separately. Now, this wine, yes, it will take 20%, 25% new oak, and it will get better with new oak, but not all of Xenomoro.
What about trellising and pruning? Mm-hmm. How does that work with a grape variety like Zeno Mavro?
Xeno Mavro is very prolific. So we always want to think of Xeno Mavro not like a bodybuilder, but rather like a marathon runner. So you really have to be very careful in pruning and really make it work hard, really try to have a balance between the root system and the foliage. What we have been doing lately is we've been trying to make the leaf higher, by 50, 60 centimeters.
That's pretty higher.
It's like much higher, right?
Bigger.
So that so the roots will go even deeper.
Okay.
You see that the balance between these two is very, very important.
So a higher trellis leads to a deeper root system.
Right.
What have you seen for the ageability of Zeno Mavro? And between the Butari winery that's made Nusa for a long period of time and then the Kiriani winery, which you own, there's been some distance of vintages there. What do you think it can do over time as a grape variety?
Well, Xenomoro is one of those varieties that is one of the dynamics, one of the things of the variety is its aging potential. Drink now the 97 Ramnista or the 2001 Ramnista, and they drink young and fresh, and they still have some power to it. So definitely, Xenomoro is a variety to be aged. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I go to tastings, and people taste the wine, and they say, oh, this is great. You know, this wine you should put down. Or, very interesting, you know, oh, I hate that. You know, that's what we're trying to do, is try to make wines that can be drunk today, but at the same time, have the aging potential. And Xenomoro does have that.
And what about Syrah? You mentioned that you've had some good results with
it. Yeah. Syrah is one of those varieties that has done very well in Greece. Everywhere in Greece, mostly in the north. Also in the Peloponnese, I would say. It has adopted very well to our estate. We have a wine called Dio Elias. It's the two olive trees, because it takes a name from the two olive trees that are in the middle of the vineyard. Southeast exposure, great plots. The wine doesn't come in America yet. However, it's a Syrah that, like the Southern Rhone. really dense fruit, nice, beautiful, great color. Syrah has adopted very, very well in Greece.
And what do you think the outlook is for Greek reds in the international market going forward?
Well, I dare to say that so far Greek whites have done much better than the Greek reds. You know, whites, wines that are made in the winery, right? I mean, the reds, you have to have the good fruit. There's no messing around in the winery. You know, the less you do it in the winery, the better you are. So I would say that Greek whites, from international varieties like Sauvignon Blanc, but mostly for Greek varieties, like the Assyrtiko and the Malagousia and the Moscophilero from Peloponnese, a very much like a Pinot Grigio style wine, have done very well. And actually, you look at the pricing of these wines, and usually it's between, you know, $12 and $25 on the shelf. I mean, for that kind of price, I mean, the great values as well. Now, you look for the reds, we still have a long way to go. You know, our good reds are quite expensive. Well, not for our U.S. standards, but anyway. But yes, the outlook is good. We're not there yet. And however, we're going to see a lot of things coming from the Peloponnese, from the region of Nemea. Going to have also from the variety called Mavro Tragano, also grown in Santorini, but in other places as well. And of course, Xenomavro.
Is the consumer for wine is within Greece different than outside of Greece?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we sell wine to 20 countries, and we hope that this number will be 40 in the next 3 years. It's completely different. You go to China, they drink only red, an expensive red, or very expensive. They buy it like they're buying a Louis Vuitton bag, or they're buying it like very cheap stuff. They don't care what they drink. You go to Greece, there is a country where only Greek wine is sold, not a lot of imported wine. People are not very knowledgeable, and they're very brand-oriented. You go to America, it's a completely different story. You know, in America, Greek wines are almost exotic. You know, they look for a variety, they look for indigenous varieties. In Greece, they would look for international varieties. You know, you would have a brand that would sell. They don't care what they drink, really, as long as they drink the brand they like. And this is because Greece has been very much of a branded market the last few years. The notion of a sommelier or a wine buyer does not really exist, unfortunately.
And what should I be drinking a grape variety like Xenomavro with? What kind of food does that complement?
Well, Xenomavro is definitely a food-friendly wine. You know, the high acidity, the tannin structure needs food. It's not a wine that you just sit around and on the porch and just sip out a glass or two. Even the rosé version of it, and Xenomavro makes a great rosé, has like a serious structure to it, good acidity, natural acidity, and even like a little tannins. It can taste like light red. The big reds, they need like really big foods as well. Meats, quite oily, you know, a big steak or something in a stew cooked. The very intense taste of the food will balance out the taste of the wine. The acidity of Xenomavro will cut right through the fats, and I think we have a nice balance to it.
And should I be thinking about decanting a Xenomavro usually? Or?
The older vintages, yes. I would say so. Definitely, they're definitely the older vintages. Although, you know, you open it today and you leave it in the bottle a couple of days, I mean, it's even better. It needs the oxygen.
What about the 2014 vintage? A lot of people in Europe have had trouble with it. I remember when I was visiting in 2014 in Greece, it seemed like there was a fair amount of rain now and again.
Well, it's one of those years. Remember I said earlier that, you know, there's no hail in Greece in July? Well, this year we had hail. On July 22nd, we had a terrible hail that completely ripped apart our vineyard. We were, thank God, not to the whole area, but we were like in the center of hail. Then, so we had a lot of problems, we thought that we wouldn't collect anything. Then we had a very dry August, beautiful August. However, we had a very, very wet September. September, it rained more than 250 millimeters. One day, September 6th, it rained 120 millimeters, when in the whole year, we don't have more than 600. So this wet September completely killed a vineyard. The vintage, so I would say, was bad. You know, not a lot of winemakers say that. You know, I dare to say that. It was one of those vintages you want to forget.
And what about the community in Nausa? In terms of the growers, how big is it? Who's there?
Nausa always had a tradition in grape growing. in the 60s, a lot of these grape growers left the grapes and started planting peach trees. It's also a great peach tree tradition. And actually, one of the reasons my father planted the vineyard at that time is to show everybody that he is there forever. And, you know, guys, follow me, because, you know, I'm going to be buying your grapes. So over the years, he knew all the growers. And when he would see a good vineyard or a good grower, he would always tell him, you know, do your own thing. You know, I'll give you bottles. I'll give you, you can use my lab, bottle your own wine. His idea was that you cannot have an appellation with one producer. You needed size. You needed more and more and more producers. Imagine you had in Barolo only Gaia, for example. You know, I mean, now we have like 800 producers in Barolo. So now you suddenly have somebody, something going there. So all these producers, little by little, these grape growers became winemakers. So now we are 18 of us. We just created the Nausa Producer Association. And we've been doing a few things to promote the Nausa region, I would say. You have to make sure that what you do is good for everybody, not just for yourself.
Kiryani's been there for about 20 years now. Looking forward, what do you think will happen in the next 20 years for your estate?
Just planted more vineyards. So, you know, in our business, we say we don't plant a vineyard for your son, you plant it for your grandson or your granddaughter, right? So for me, if you ask me, we're on the right track. I mean, meaning we know where we're going. We're not there yet. Sonoma Road, we're not there yet. However, I strongly believe that in the next 10 years, Sonoma Road will find its place. Sonoma Road wines, and Kiryani, of course, as well, will find its place on the worldwide scene, being like the ambassador of Greek red wine. And this is something that's not only for Sonoma Road or Kiryani, it's all for all of Greek wine. We're doing the right things to build Greece as a whole, as a modern winemaking region. And this is very, very important. Now, with Kiryani, yeah, we hope we're going to be one of those people who are going to be at the forefront of this development.
Stelios Boutaris, he's looking to be at the forefront of the Nousa appellation in northwestern Greece. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Levy. Thank you.
Stelios Boutaris of the Kiryani Estate in Greece. 750 is an easy platform for discovering everything you need to find as a wholesale buyer of wine and spirits. The searches are easy to do, and they provide a wealth of information for you to determine exactly what you need to buy today. Pricing, size, characteristics, who the distributor is, the contact information, and even helpful features like easy startup of credit apps are all available for you, as well as a listing of tastings, which is something I refer to almost all the time to find out about the tastings in my neighborhood. I personally use the 750 service. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's extraordinarily helpful if you are a buyer of wine and spirits at the wholesale level, and I recommend that you waste no time in making it a part of your daily routine. 750.com, the 750 service, make it work for you.
That was our show.
If you're curious about what we're up to in the future, check us out on Facebook. Give us a like and you'll see all our fancy, fancy posts. It's I'll Drink to That, Talking Wine with Levy Dalton is a Facebook fan page. Hey, fan page. Yeah. We're on Twitter at Drink to That Pod. And we're also up on Instagram. Some pretty artistic shots sometimes. Sometimes not. Sometimes good, though. At Levy Opens Wine. And then I got to tell you, we're also got our own website there. It's alldrinktothatpod.com, where you can stream stuff off of it or download direct episodes so you don't have to go through iTunes if you don't want to. We like to give options. We're about options here. So lots to do, lots to think about. Maybe you want a t-shirt. Maybe you like a fancy, well, they're not that fancy, but they're pretty cool. I'll Drink to That t-shirt of your very own in a variety of different colors, shapes, sizes, onesies even. I mean, you can get onesies, you can get tanks, you can get biker tanks, you can get tees, you can get other stuff, hoodies, for God's sakes. It's all up there. You can find the information up on our website if you'd like to check it out and wear what you hear. And then there's also that possibility you could shoot us some real support. Shoot us a little dough. Help keep the microphones rolling. We are here because of dedication, because of love, because of interest. But We're also here because we make the finances work, and we could always use a little help with that. Thanks for your consideration. So why is it Boutari and Boutaris? Why is that?
Well, in Greek, you decline the names. So, you know, it's Stelios. I mean, if you talk, I am Stelios Boutaris, the S in the end. This phone belongs to Stelios Boutari.
Oh, okay.
Stelios. I'm calling you. It's Stelios.
Yeah.
So it's... it's like German, kind of. Everything changes in the end.
So it's like saying that you own that winery. That winery is
right. So the wine is belong to Boutari, right?